Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the Q&A session, if you'd like to ask a question, you may press star one on your phone. Today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections, please disconnect at this time. Now I'd like to turn the meeting over to Ms. Kathy Harbin. You may begin.
Okay. Thank you, Ted, and thank you all for joining us today for the release of a new CDC vital signs. This one is about babies with Zika-related health problems in the U.S. territories. We are joined by CDC Director Dr. Robert Redfield, Dr. Peggy Honane, who is Director of CDC's Division of Congenital and Developmental Disorders, and we also have Dr. Lyle Peterson. He's Director of CDC's Division of Vector-Borne Diseases. Dr. Redfield will provide opening remarks. Dr. Honane also has remarks and will answer questions, and Dr. Peterson will also be available during the Q&A. I'll turn the call over now to Dr. Redfield.
Thank you, and good afternoon, and thank you all for joining us today. CDC's mission is to protect the health, safety, and security of this nation. Each month in Vital Signs, we focus on a disease from the front lines of CDC science and what can be done about it to protect and save more lives. Today's report contains new information about the health outcomes of babies born to mothers who had Zika during pregnancy and the medical care these babies need. Shortly after CDC's response to Zika began, the U.S. Zika Pregnancy and Infant Registry was established to monitor Zika's impact on pregnant women and their babies. Today's findings include the information on more than 4,800 pregnant women in U.S. territories who had laboratory evidence of Zika between 2016 and 2018. We are reporting on the health outcomes of 1,450 infants from these pregnancies who were at least 1 year old and who had at least some follow-up care reported. What we found is that about 1 in 7, or 14% of these 1,450 babies had one or more health problems, possibly related to Zika. This includes some serious birth defects and nervous system problems that were not apparent at birth. Pregnancy and birth defect surveillance are key components of CDC's preparedness work. Birth defects can be the first sign that an emerging infection can cause serious harm. CDC is a science-based, data-driven service organization, and critical data are provided by clinicians as well as state, local, tribal, and territorial health departments. These partners have played a key role in providing the data to this registry, which has helped us better understand the impact of Zika on pregnant women and their babies. By doing this surveillance in the United States and internationally, we can quickly detect emergency threats and strengthen our global health security. Remember, diseases know no borders, and a health threat anywhere is a health threat everywhere. Global health security is crucial to ensuring the health and safety of our nation. We are still learning about the effects of Zika, and it might be years before we fully understand the full spectrum of the health outcomes related to Zika infection during pregnancy. We do know some babies may appear healthy at birth, but can develop long-term health problems as they grow. That is why continued monitoring and follow-up evaluations are so crucial, and healthcare providers play a key role in these efforts. By continuing to follow these babies as they age and grow, we will learn more about Zika and remain alert to the problems that may develop over time. We thank clinicians for their continued commitment to conduct all necessary tests and evaluations to assure the appropriate care. So what do these findings mean for pregnant women and their families living in our nation today? Although this report is focused on babies born in U.S. territories, it's important to remember that almost 2,500 pregnancies in the United States also have laboratory evidence of Zika during the same time frame. Nearly all of these cases happened when pregnant women traveled to Zika-affected areas. CDC regularly issues guidelines to help people make decisions about travel and how to protect themselves against emerging health threats. Zika is still a risk. especially for pregnant women and their developing babies. CDC continues to recommend that pregnant women do not travel to areas with risk of Zika because infection during pregnancy can have devastating consequences. And for people who do travel to those areas or who live there, we know it's not easy, but it's important to continue to take extra precautions about protecting against mosquito bites and getting Zika through sex. The Zika virus continues to spread at low levels in many areas of the world. Nearly 100 countries and territories have a risk of Zika. The bottom line is Zika has not gone away, and we must remain cautious, both here in the United States and elsewhere. Now, I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Peggy Hoonan, who will share the details about the important findings in this vital science. Peggy.
Thank you, Dr. Redfield. Today's report focuses on the information gained from our collaboration with the U.S. territories and freely associated states. These include American Samoa, the Federated States of Micronesia, Puerto Rico, the Republic of Marshall Islands, and the U.S. Virgin Islands. We plan to report about health outcomes and the care of babies born to mothers with Zika during pregnancy in the combined U.S. states and D.C. in the coming months. Today's report is the largest to date involving longer-term outcomes among the babies born to mothers who had laboratory evidence of Zika during their pregnancy. These are the first published data on the health of babies in the U.S. at 1 year of age or older from the ongoing surveillance network of infants who were exposed to Zika before birth. As Dr. Redfield mentioned, over 4,800 pregnancies with lab evidence of Zika were identified in the U.S. territories and enrolled in the U.S. Zika Pregnancy and Infant Registry. From those pregnancies, over 2,100 babies were 1 year or older by February of this year, the cutoff date for today's report. What makes this report unique is that we're looking at the health of these babies beyond what was observed at birth. We looked at medical information reported to the surveillance network as these children grew. We found that 1,450 infants, or about two-thirds, who were at least 1 year of age by the cutoff, had some medical follow-up information after 2 weeks of age that was reported to our surveillance network. This report focuses on the health outcomes of and care received by these 1,450 babies. We do not yet have information on the health outcomes and care received by the remaining one-third of infants. We know that Zika infection during pregnancy can cause severe birth defects in infants and lead to lifelong health problems. We found that among these 1,450 babies who had some follow-up care reported, about 1 in 7, or 14%, had one or more health problems possibly related to Zika. 6% had one or more Zika-associated birth defects identified and reported, which is over 30 times higher than the baseline for these brain and eye defects in the absence of Zika during pregnancy. About 9% of these children had at least one Zika-associated nervous system problem identified and reported to the surveillance network, such as seizures, problems with swallowing and moving, hearing loss, or developmental delay based on standardized testing. We know that these health problems can lead to long-term functional challenges. Based on what we've learned about other congenital infections, we suspect that health issues will continue to emerge as these children age. This is why it is so absolutely critical that these babies receive care to identify issues as soon as possible. This report identified opportunities for improvement in follow-up care. We were encouraged to see that 95% of babies in this analysis had at least one physical exam after the first 2 weeks of life. About 76% of these babies had an evaluation to check their development, and over half, or about 60%, received the recommended brain imaging after birth. However, based on the data we've received so far, only about half had the recommended hearing evaluation, and only about one-third received an eye exam from a specialist. Parents and doctors need to work together to make sure all babies are evaluated, even babies that look healthy at birth. While this report describes data from the U.S. territories, it contains important reminders for healthcare providers serving families across the U.S. and globally. We urge healthcare providers and parents to remain vigilant. If a mother tests positive for Zika during pregnancy, it's critical to share her test results with the baby's doctors after birth so that appropriate care can be provided. Pediatricians can ask every mother of a new baby about Zika exposure during pregnancy. If possible, Zika exposure during pregnancy is identified by these questions. Extra monitoring is recommended for the baby. Some health problems can easily go undetected, which is why it's so important that these babies receive all the recommended care and evaluation, even if they appear healthy. At each well-child visit, following clinical guidelines, healthcare providers can ask parents questions about their child's development. This activity is referred to as developmental monitoring, and it can help healthcare providers identify any concerns with how that child is developing. The American Academy of Pediatrics recommends that all babies receive an age-appropriate developmental screening using a standardized, validated test at 9 months of age, 18 months of age, and 30 months of age. When problems are identified, referrals to specialty care such as neurology, ophthalmology, physical therapy, or other specialties can be based on what's found by the clinical provider. Identifying health problems early can help babies and children get the services they need. For example, babies with eye problems might be fitted with special corrective lenses or receive eye exercises to help strengthen their eye muscles. And babies with feeding problems might benefit from the services of a lactation specialist or a gastroenterologist who can work with the parents to make sure the baby is getting the nutrients that he or she needs. Babies with seizures might require medication to minimize their seizure events. Babies with developmental and learning delays might benefit from early intervention such as speech therapy, physical therapy, and other types of services based on the needs of the child and the family. These services can improve the child's ability to learn new skills, overcome challenges, and will help us ensure that every child gets the chance to reach their full potential. Together, clinicians and families can make sure every baby gets the care he or she needs. As Dr. Redfield mentioned earlier, everyone, especially pregnant women and their partners, should continue to take steps to protect themselves from Zika. In addition to reporting the health outcomes of affected babies, today we are also releasing updated guidance for couples thinking about becoming pregnant after Zika virus exposure or known Zika virus infection to prevent sexual transmission of Zika. This report includes a new CDC recommendation that men with possible Zika virus exposure or known Zika infection who are planning to conceive wait at least 3 months after they develop symptoms of Zika or after their last Zika exposure before trying to conceive. The previous guidance was that men wait at least 6 months before trying to conceive. These updated recommendations are based on emerging data suggesting the risk of infectious Zika virus in semen declined substantially during the 3 months after onset of symptoms. All other Zika guidance remains unchanged. Please remember that CDC continues to recommend that pregnant women not travel to any areas with risk of Zika. Men with pregnant partners who have lived in or traveled to an area with risk of Zika can avoid transmitting Zika during sex by using condoms or abstaining from sex for the duration of the pregnancy, because Zika-associated birth defects and other health problems can occur with infection in any trimester of pregnancy. People who travel to areas with risk of Zika can talk to their healthcare provider about the risks before they go and take extra precautions like using an EPA-registered insect repellent to avoid getting bitten by mosquitoes. Pregnant women and their partners who live in an area with risk of Zika should take steps to prevent mosquito bites and prevent sexual transmission of Zika. Zika is now established and continues to circulate in places around the world, including in the U.S. Together, we can take steps to prevent Zika infection during pregnancy and support families of babies that have been affected by Zika. The Zika story is not over, especially for the children and families who have been directly affected. Thank you, and I'll turn it back over to our moderator now.
Thank you, Dr. Honing. Ted, we're ready now for questions, and just a reminder that Dr. Honing and also Dr. Peterson are available.
The phone lines are now open for questions. If you would like to ask a question over the phone, please press star 1 and record your name. If you'd like to withdraw your question, press star 2. Thank you. The first question in the queue is from Mike Stobie from the Associated Press. Your line is now open.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Two questions. Dr. Honing spoke to this a little bit, but I was wondering what the background rate was. I think doctor said that for certain brain and eye defects, which you all found, at 6% was 30 times higher. I take it that the background rate is 0.2%, but what's the background rate for the other problems that were probably caused by Zika? You were talking about seizures, movement difficulty. What's the background rate for all of this compared to the 14% seen in this study?
So in this report, 6% had Zika-associated birth defects, which you're correct is about more than 30-fold higher than the background prevalence for these serious birth defects of the brain and of the eye, which is about 0.16% among live-born infants in pregnancies that don't have Zika infection. So a more than a 30-fold increase for the Zika-associated birth defects. For the neurodevelopmental problems, we don't have a similar baseline comparison. We looked at the neurodevelopmental problems that have been seen in children who have some of the most severe effects of Zika, so children with severe microcephaly and brain anomalies, and they have seen the same types of neurodevelopmental disorders that we looked for in this report, the problems moving and motor disabilities, seizures, swallowing problems, the joint contractures that make it difficult for them to move their arms and legs. In a population of children age 1, we don't have a good background prevalence, and it really it emphasizes how much more we have to learn about the full impact of Zika. We're seeing these neurodevelopmental problems that are possibly linked to Zika in 9% of the children here, including many children who didn't have any Zika-associated birth defects. And this is why parents and healthcare providers need to work closely together to follow up and monitor the development of children, even if they look healthy at birth.
Next question,
okay.
Please.
Next question is from Susan Scuti with CNN. Your line is now open.
When was the last documented introduction of Zika into the mainland U.S.?
So there hasn't been any local transmission of Zika in the continental U.S. in 2018, and I will turn to Dr. Peterson on the phone to see if he has the specifics on the last local transmission in the continental U.S.
Yes, well, I do not have the exact date, but it was in late 2016.
Next question, please.
Next question is from Andrew Joseph with STAT. Your line is now open.
Hi, thanks. Were you able to figure out if there was any association between these neurodevelopmental abnormalities and the timing or, I guess, trimester of infection in pregnancy?
We have not yet assessed the timing of pregnancy and the role that has on neurodevelopmental abnormalities, but we do know for Zika-associated birth defects that the highest risk is in the first part of pregnancy, but there is a risk of Zika-associated birth defects with infection in any trimester of pregnancy, which is why it's important that pregnant women not go to areas of risk throughout their pregnancy. And if they're living in an area with risk of Zika, they take precautions to prevent transmission throughout the entire pregnancy.
Next question, please.
Next question is from Melissa Healy with the Los Angeles Times. Your line is now open.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. I just want to clarify a little bit about the population of babies that that made up the studied population here. Were all of these women were infected in the United States? Were they all U.S. residents, or did they simply all have their babies in the United States? I'm trying to distinguish what makes these women different, say, from Brazilian women who were infected in Brazil.
So the 4,800 pregnancies that we're reporting on from the U.S. territories and freely associated states were all women who delivered their pregnancies in one of those U.S. territories or freely associated states. So in all likelihood, they were also infected because all of those places had local transmission of Zika, but all of them completed their pregnancy in the U.S. territories and freely associated states. The follow-up care could be received from anywhere where those children received follow-up care. So we know, for example, Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands were heavily hit by the hurricanes in 2017. Some families were displaced to the continental U.S., and where it was possible to identify where people had been displaced to, follow-up information up to a year old could come from their new location or their original location.
Next question, please.
Next question is from Lauren Clayson with CQ. Your line is now open.
Hi. I was wondering if you guys expect the incidence to increase as these children get older, if you expect, I mean, all these children you said are at least 1 year old, but as they, you know, get to 2 years or 3 years, do you expect more symptoms to appear then, or is there some sort of cutoff for when these symptoms will appear?
Based on what we know about other congenital infections, we expect to learn more as these children grow and develop and additional problems are identified or diagnosed. It's also important to emphasize that all 1,450 of these babies were at least a year old, but we didn't necessarily have complete follow-up information on them out to a year old. And we know that not all of them had data on specific evaluations like eye exams reported to the surveillance network. So as we learn more, we are likely to identify additional children with health problems such as vision problems, hearing problems, motor disabilities, cognitive disabilities. So the Zika story really is not over, and we have so much more to learn.
Next question, please.
Next question is from Donna Young with S&P Global News. Your line is now open.
Thank you for taking my question. First of all, could you clarify when you talk about in the report the 2,500 pregnancies in the U.S., are you talking about those specifically in states like Miami as well? Because that's a little bit confusing on when you're talking about the within the report, are those continental U.S. states versus the U.S. territories? And then also, are you able to talk a little bit at all about the status of the Zika virus vaccine development? Thank you.
Thank you. So CDC's surveillance network for monitoring the pregnancies and infant outcomes resulting from Zika infection during pregnancy includes infants from 7,300 pregnancies in the U.S. states and territories combined. About 2,500 of those are in the U.S. states and D.C., and those are not included in today's report. And about 4,800 of those pregnancies are in the U.S. territories and freely associated states, which is the topic of today's report. And these were the areas hardest hit by Zika, with local transmission of Zika throughout them. From these 4,800 pregnancies, about half of them had babies that were at least a year old, and about two-thirds of those one-year-olds, we had some follow-up information reported to us. So that's where the 1,450 babies in the report comes from. And I'm sorry, you had a second question? On the vaccine, Lyle, did you want to provide a brief update on the vaccine?
Yeah, first I'd like to make a correction. The last cases of locally transmitted Zika virus infection were actually in 2017, We had 2 in Florida and 5 in Texas. But as Dr. Honan has indicated, that there's been no local transmission so far in 2018. As far as the Zika virus vaccine, I think questions regarding the vaccine and the current status are best directed to the National Institutes of Health, who are actually organizing that effort.
We have time for a couple more questions. Next question, please.
Next question is from Carrie Sheridan with AFP. Your line is now open.
Oh, thanks for taking my question. I have 2. Could you discuss a bit about the rate of birth defects in this population and if or how it varies from the children affected by Zika in Brazil? And my second question is, why do you think you mentioned you don't have information on the remaining 1/3 of babies yet? Why is that? Thanks.
So thank you for that question. So in estimating the impact that Zika during pregnancy has on babies, one important feature is the criteria that you use to define the adverse outcomes or the health problems of interest. So CDC has established a criteria which includes microcephaly, defects of the brain, and eye problems as meeting the criteria for Zika-associated birth defects. Using those criteria in a variety of countries, we've pretty consistently seen 5 to 10% of the babies from pregnancies with Zika having one of these brain or eye defects or microcephaly. There have been some reports that have used different criteria and have included a broader range of outcomes, including some findings on MRI imaging of unknown clinical significance. And if you use broader criteria, you will see more babies affected. But based on the CDC criteria, we've seen in reports in numerous countries, and we think that there isn't a geographic difference, but more a case criteria difference in the prevalence of Zika-associated birth defects.
Information.
So for the 1/3 of babies that we don't have follow-up information yet, it really speaks to the complexity of following up pediatric care for people that may see a variety of providers or may move and seek care in other settings. So we're continuing to work very closely with the territorial health departments as well as state health departments to follow up on all of the children who have been impacted by Zika during pregnancy. We really urge parents and healthcare providers to work closely together to make sure all children are receiving the care and evaluation they need. And as more children receive that care and that information is reported to state and territorial health departments, it will improve our ability to understand the full impact of Zika on these children.
Okay. We have time for one final question.
The final question is from Mike Stobie with the Associated Press. Your line is now open.
Hi. Thanks for letting me go again. I had another part of my earlier question. First of all, I wanted to ask Dr. Peterson, you said the last local transmission was in 2017, and you were talking about Florida and Texas. When was the last local transmission in Puerto Rico or one of the territories? Also, could you all speak to, I think the language was that these 14% possibly were related to Zika. Could you just say a little more about what does possibly mean? It's very likely, or no, there are some other there are other possible explanations why some of these children had these. And the last question was, could you say a little bit more about possible reasons why in Puerto Rico or other territories that the children didn't get all the evaluations that would have been recommended? Thank you.
Happy to. Lyle, would you like to start?
Sure. So far in 2018, there has been 74 cases of Zika virus reported in the U.S. territories, almost all in Puerto Rico. There's one caveat to this 74 cases, however. Most of these cases were in symptomatic people who were diagnosed with the antibody test or the IgM antibody test. What we do know is that the IgM antibody test remains positive in some people even for longer than a year. So it's often very difficult to determine whether some of these symptoms are actually due to Zika virus or not if they do have a positive antibody test, although they are classified as cases. But we do know that that there still is ongoing transmission in Puerto Rico. It is at a low, much lower level than obviously we've seen it in previous years, but there is ongoing transmission currently.
Okay, and to follow up on your questions on causal versus possibly, so there is sufficient evidence that accumulated early on in the emergency response to know that Zika can cause serious birth defects, including microcephaly, the brain abnormalities, and the eye defects that we have seen in many of these children. With the neurodevelopmental problems, we're calling them possibly caused by Zika because we are still learning much more about how often these happen, how often these would happen in one-year-old children without Zika. We're very focused in on the same neurodevelopmental problems that we see with children who have some of the severe birth defects and those small case groups of severely affected children that have been followed up. And this is really providing us with the first clues about how common some of these neurodevelopmental disabilities might be in an entire cohort of children that are impacted by Zika during pregnancy. So we're learning more. We know that all of these children, regardless of the cause of the neurodevelopmental disorder, need referrals to receive the interventions and have the best outcomes possible. But we can't say with certainty how many of these neurodevelopmental problems were caused by Zika. I think it really emphasizes that the Zika story is not yet over. We're still learning more every day about the full impact of these infections. There was a report released last Thursday with some CDC co-authors about two older children with severe congenital Zika syndrome whose mothers were infected in Cambodia in 2009 and 2011. And those children provide us some of the clues about the complex medical care that is needed for these severely affected children as they grow and develop. So much more to learn.
Okay, thank you very much, Drs. Redfield and Dr. Honain and Dr. Peterson. Also, thank you to the reporters who joined us today. If you have follow-up questions, you can call the press office here at CDC at 404-639-3286, or you can email us at media@cdc.gov. Thank you for joining us. This concludes our call.
This concludes today's call. Thank you for your participation. You may disconnect at this time.